You're listening to the Inspire Excellence Podcast, recorded at the BVA headquarters with your hosts, Kevin Miller and Tommy Ahlquist. Each episode is focused on shedding new light on different perspectives to create dialogue that inspires excellence.
And welcome once again to Inspiring Excellence. Tommy Ahlquist, Kevin Miller here. And Tommy, today we've got a very unique panel that promises to be a very lively discussion, sir.
Yeah, one of the things we want to talk about early, what you hear about a lot is just journalism, changing face of journalism in our state, in the Valley, nationally, the challenges that are facing journalism, and we thought it would be great to get some very well-respected folks here, and we'll let you do the introductions, but I think you and I wanted this to be one of our first topics.
Sure, but I have a question for you.
Yeah.
You've traveled the state, you've lived in the world, you've campaigned. What were your impressions versus your reality of dealing with the press?
You know, I would say in general, most of the time, it was very, very professional, great interactions, good people doing things for the right reasons. And then I will tell you, there were articles written where people put no homework in, no time, and I'm thinking, why on earth would they have written that about me, right? And you take it very personally. So I do see the other side of this when that happens, and then I think people leash out and say, oh, look at journalism, you know. But a lot of things get written, and it's so easy now, right? Now you just need a computer, and you can throw something out there. And so in my mind, I really separate the two out. I think there are the people that are the journalists that are doing it, that are trained, that are professional, and I had great experiences. And then I had maybe the blogosphere, the people that are just, you know, in their pajamas smoking cigarettes somewhere in their basement that really should crawl back underneath the rock from whence they came.
Well, I'm glad you're not holding anything back, but one more follow-up, if I could. What was that like just being the first time being the subject of an article?
Ooh, when you're not used to it?
Right.
It happened early. There was a guy up in North Idaho that very early on wrote something, and it was published everywhere around the state. That's the problem, is it gets picked up. And it was just so raw for me because it never had happened. I thought, how dare someone say all those things without even him calling me or talking to me? And then by the end, you just get used to it. But right. But it's a sad thing to get used to. And I think, hopefully we talk about this today, that's part of what we're up against, right? Is you've got this age of information where things just fly out there and it's easy for people to get offended and say, ah, journalists, right? And then you have the journalists that do their homework. They're good people that are in it for the right reason, that really want to know the story. And the value of being able to tell that story to people, that's, man, what a critical part of America. So hopefully we get into that today, but that was my experience, Kevin. Oh, sorry, you got me going early.
That's what we're trying to do here. Joining us today, Katie Moeller from the Idaho Statesman, Scott McIntosh from the Idaho Press, and Joe Parrish from KTVB Channel 7. Welcome all. Katie, why don't we start with you? What got you into journalism?
Actually, I wanted to be a veterinarian and was not a great biology student. And then I studied Russian and became proficient at Russian and got a degree in Russian and decided I wasn't going to become an interpreter, and then I was like, what am I good at? Maybe I should figure this out the other direction. And my brother went to Syracuse University, as Scott McIntosh did, and he studied journalism, and he was a newspaper guy his whole life, and I just rode his coattails. I was like, I'll be a newspaper journalist, worked for the school paper, got my first job in California, worked at a bunch of papers, went to Mexico City, worked in Oregon and New York, and then came back to Boise because my parents lived here.
Mm-hmm. Scott?
Well, I want to tell a quick story because it's interesting you're talking about being the subject of a story. When we first moved to Idaho, my wife and I moved to Idaho, we purchased the Cunamelba News in 2006, and I got a phone call from a reporter at the Idaho Statesman named Katie Moeller, who said, I heard that you bought the Cunamelba News, want to do a story. And I was like, yeah, come on down. Well, there was a little bit of controversy. I don't know if you remember this, Katie, but there was a little bit of controversy with somebody in the community who did not like the fact that we bought the newspaper. And Katie came in and interviewed us and took our photo, and it was a great interview. And then she left, and Tom, you probably know this experience. Once she leaves, then you're like, oh my God, what's she going to write?
Right, yeah.
You know, and we're like, you know, waiting for the story to come out, and it didn't come out, and then I think...
What did you tell me that you didn't want me to include in the story?
Well, you know, I was afraid. I didn't know.
Hey, can that come out today on today's podcast, number 3?
I'm going to find those notes.
Well, and so she wrote this great story. She definitely included the controversy, but she handled it properly and accurately and appropriately. And that article is framed and hanging on my office wall to this day. So Katie and I go way back.
Wow.
I heard you wrote a book about buying a newspaper. Where is that book? I've been to read it.
Well, it's on my computer. I'm struggling with figuring out what to do with it. Maybe it'll come out someday.
Did you answer the question?
I didn't.
No, you didn't.
I love this role reversal, by the way.
I'm like, whoa.
Like interviewing these guys.
I think it's time to ask the hard questions here.
But
yes.
I watched All the President's Men when I was 12 years old, and that was it for me. That's how I...
True believer.
Yep, absolutely. And so I went into journalism. I started a school paper in my middle school. I became the editor of the high school paper. Went to Syracuse University to study newspaper journalism, and the rest is history. I've been in newspaper journalism for 25 years on June 24th next year.
Wow. Joe Parrish.
Yeah, that's me. I'm one of those dorky journalism kids that watch the Today Show every day since I can remember. And that's just what I wanted to do. I wanted to always be a reporter. I went to reporting camp when I was in like third or fourth grade. And at the time, I made a huge mistake. I thought you could just say whatever. And I learned very quickly at a young age, you had to have a story. You couldn't just, because they had cameras and stuff for us. And I was reporting, in air quotes, not on camera, so it's, I have to explain this. I was reporting about the NBA draft, and I was just deciding who had been selected by which team with wishful thinking. And the guy that did the camp is like, great job, but not at all. This is journalism. So that was a really, at a young age, I realized.
Original fake news.
This is the original fake. Yeah, I started.
Is that where it started?
That started. So,
I
Joe. That's, sorry. 2004 was a dark year for everyone. But yeah, I loved it. I wrote for the high school newspaper in Colorado and went to the University of Colorado Boulder. And the night that I realized this was it for me was CU Boulder hosted the Republican candidate primary for president. And so all the big candidates were in Boulder. Donald Trump was there. And I saw him from a distance, and I watched the stuff on CNBC and the excitement, the politics, and I was, this is it. This is the greatest thing ever. So I'm stuck now, Kevin. I'm not going anywhere.
It's the life you chose.
This is it. Because right. I think about, I mean, it's not a secret. There's a lot of people that leave journalism and go to the dark side, the other side, public information. And, you know, you see that, and I could never do that. Like, I couldn't do anything else. I want to be an astronaut, but I'm not qualified. So I guess I'll be a journalist.
We've got the Russian, we've got the publisher, we've got the astronaut.
The astronaut.
It's a great panel, Tommy.
This is great. Well, let's jump right into it. What are the challenges from your perspective? Because I think the reason we're having this topic on our podcast so early is we see challenges out there. I just lived them, but what, from your perspective, what are the challenges that are facing? And that may mean lots of things to you in different media types, in perception, in the future, in national politics right now. Let's have an open discussion about it.
Money. For newspapers, at least, and I think TV is going to start feeling the effects of it. It's the business model that the internet has wrought havoc on our business model, particularly in print, and so it's less money, less advertising revenue, and you know, I don't know the exact numbers, but the number of working journalists in the country over the last 10-15 years has gone down by half. So there are fewer reporters, there's less money to pay for reporters, and the digital pie is fractured in a million and a half different ways. So that's the biggest challenge, the creating a business model that will continue to support journalism.
Yeah, I just saw a statistic, and it's a little bit old, it's from like 2016, but in 2000 there were like 2 public information officers for every journalist for every reporter.
Yep.
And now it's like 5 for every journalist. So we're being inundated with press releases, and we have fewer and fewer people to cover things. And of course, we want to do much beyond press releases. We want to do enterprise stories. We want to do investigations and stuff. And so we're overwhelmed with all these press releases, and we really want to get out and dig into the community and do investigative stuff. So it's kind of a double whammy, and then the fake news thing on top of everything creates another level of stress because people are questioning whether we're doing our jobs right or well.
The fake news thing is what we want to talk about. I mean, that's the perception of what the media is and who journalists are. It's toxic sometimes. And in television, for example, we, Channel 7, KTVB, our network banner is NBC. So if NBC as a whole runs something controversial or runs something that a viewer doesn't like, they don't separate NBC Nightly News or an NBC reporter from KTVB local news, and we get thrown into this pile. And all of a sudden, if you know there's a national story, for example, criticizing the president, then all of a sudden, well, Channel 7 criticized the president, well, then Joe Paris criticized the president, I'm not going to watch anymore. When, you know, we might have never even run the story on our air, but they saw NBC and they think KTVB. And that's hard to compete with.
So let's dig into this. I'm glad we got there quick. So perceptions, you know, I was taught early in my business life that, you know, your customer's perception is your reality, right? Try to change it all you want. But the perception is that there are you know, biased media that will only report what they want to report. Now, I certainly did not experience that in Idaho. Most of the time, it was very straightforward. But I can tell you that, yeah, I did have experiences where someone came into that, and no matter what I said, I had one guy sit down with me for 1 hour and never take his eyes off his computer, never looked me in the eye, and at the end of it, wrote garbage without asking a question. And I would consider that, you know, that builds up that bias against, hey, that's not right. One other quick story, and then I want to hear your point. I went back to Mar-a-Lago, got to spend some time with Donald Trump Jr. One night was a private event, and then the next day was a giant open-to-the-media event. And I listened to him speak for an hour. And I got to tell you, spending time with him for the night before and then an hour listening to him, I was super impressed with what he said. And because it was open to the media, I thought, it's going to be interesting to see what they report. And in an entire hour of a great speech, that so much of it was insightful to me and it was really good, I looked the next day at what was reported by the media, and it was disgusting to me that that's what was taken away. And the only thing I could take away is they went there ready to pick apart and tear him apart for what he did. That I came back from that, I'll tell you, with a completely different perception of the family, because I thought, boy, that would be tough. That would be tough to spend an hour giving an hour-long speech and have them take away what they did. So I do think that exists out there. The problem I have is you've got good journalists. I would hate to be in your shoes right now, because you're out doing a good job doing your what you and so that's, throw it back to you. What are you thinking?
What do you think, Scott, about, you know, political reporting? Is it such a unique thing? And I have never done political reporting. I might have covered the coroner's race here and there. I do low kind of local level political reporting, but reporting on that level, certainly never. And I just feel like that's such a unique kind of reporting, and it's coloring and affecting all of us in the trenches. What do you think?
Yeah, and I would separate local journalism from national journalism, and I don't have cable, so I don't know.
Nor do I.
I never watch CNN.
I can't stand it. I watch all
Fox
the local.
News. I'm not an expert on national politics or national media, so I just know local journalism, and that's what we tell people when people want to criticize or want to pick a fight with me over the media, the big bad media. I say, look, you know, read our local stories, and you tell me if you can find anything that's unfair or biased. And so that's kind of, I can't speak for the New York Times or how they do things or CNN or NBC News. I can just speak for what we do in our newsroom with local journalism.
How do you get that message out? Because I think your point is, it is coloring everything downstream. I feel sorry for you guys sometimes. So I'm like, I know that I lived it, and it was fair, and it was professional, and it was with local. But then you've got this, whether you like it or not, if you look at the statistics in Idaho of people that watch Fox News or CNN, and that's where they get most of what they get. That's what they're getting, right?
Well, there's nothing wrong with Fox News.
There's nothing wrong.
Just want to have a disclaimer. There's nothing wrong with Fox News.
No, but that's where they're getting it. So as the local news outlets, that's your reality. How do you message that, hey, local media is, you know, professional and doing what they should be doing? Thoughts on that?
You just got to do your job. I mean, we can't spend time saying, look at us, because it's a waste of time, A, and B, we don't have time for it. In TV, when you have the morning show that I work on is a little different because we have 3 hours. I'm not sure we could fit in a little PSA in there, but not that we should. But it's tough because the best way to do your job is just to go in there and work hard. And regardless of what effort you put in, as I found out during the political cycle, someone's going to really like it, someone's going to really hate it, and someone's not going to care. And you have to know in your newsroom, and you have to know with your staff that you trust the people you work with and you're doing a good job. More than once, I got an angry phone call in the same day about something I'd said about you on TV, positive and negative, and that makes you feel really good when someone's really angry and someone's really happy, because you know then, okay.
Hey, listen, when you would come out with those Verify things, I was the first one to listen.
I love those segments, yeah.
Those scared me to death, because I was honestly, people got so fired up about those Verifies, I got nasty calls and nasty emails, and you don't know what someone's going to do, and it's important to do them, but people got so, especially the May primary, people got so invested in that. It was fun because everyone was talking about it and people were
And we've never talked about this.
We haven't. You and I have never talked about this.
We've never talked about this, but I will tell you, as someone on the inside, you did an excellent job. And you know, did I like it always when you would say, but you know what, I look back at our facts that we had behind our Oppo research that we were using, and I thought, you know what, spot on. So, and I think that's a great example of most people that weren't completely biased in the campaign, I think appreciated very much. In fact, what we started doing on the campaign is saying, hey, go to KTVB and go to the Verify story that was just on this and look at it. But I think that was a good example of how professional our journalism is. But anyway.
I don't think it's all bad that the public is skeptical of what the media reports. And I think most of us in the media read widely and watch multiple TV broadcasts to get the full picture. I mean, nobody has the full picture. You should look. You should read widely, and you should watch widely, and not just focus on one network. You're getting their perspective. I'm not saying they're biased. I'm just saying they can't cover all aspects of every story.
Yeah, and I'm more disappointed with the lack of depth on the issues from the national media, particularly with the presidential campaign. I kept on waiting for stories about comparing the different tax policies that the candidates had, and you know, you never saw it. It was always about what inflammatory thing Trump said yesterday, and you know, was it a dog whistle that he was, you know, signaling to his supporter? It was, and it was just like, well, I was waiting for stories that were talking about the issues, and that for me is the biggest danger that we have in journalism, is that we're so focused on these incendiary stories that were less focused on the issues.
So where's it going? Can you guys imagine 2020? I mean, you're going to have, I mean, I can't even, we had a national expert come to our summit we did in Sun Valley last month and talk about the 2020 election and what the prediction is. And you know, he was saying, listen, it's going to be more intense than anything we've ever seen. On the left, you're going to have, you know, 16, 17, 18 candidates all going hard at each other, and you've got President Trump on the right, and it's going to be crazy. Any thoughts on what that will do to national journalism and local journalism because of the amount of oxygen it sucks up?
Well, people, to your point. There's going to be fatigue. Yeah. There's going to be extreme fatigue, and there already is, because it's so constant, especially with cable news. And one thing I do want to put out is there's a huge difference between pundits and reporters. And sometimes for viewers, it's hard to tell the difference, because if you're not familiar with who's talking and you see them on CNN, you might assume they're a reporter, and that's what CNN or Fox is reporting. And these nightly shows, or these 24-hour cable network shows, a lot of the time they will feature experts or someone in a field talking about a story, not reporting a story, and people will take up nuggets that they hear on TV and they'll take that as fact. And if you have someone, a former Trump advisor, talking about something in a campaign, and he's talking hypotheticals, and someone's just listening to part of that, and they take that as fact, and they tell 10 people, then they tell 10 people, well, that's where you have a whole new story that just created itself, because one person didn't realize who they were listening to. And as more and more of these pundits are on television, and as people get more and more exhausted of listening, that's where you have a real danger of misinformation. And when you talk about fake news, and this is not a popular opinion sometimes, In the journalism community, there's absolutely fake news. And there is stuff out there that just isn't true. But the problem is no one's going to take time, 8-10 hours out of their day, to go through and fact check what they heard in a 30-second soundbite, because no one has time for that. And so it's really dangerous.
Yeah, those talk shows, I think, are just toxic. I think they're polluting and poisoning our culture. They're not shows.
I'm going to change. I'm going to have to change what I listen to in the morning, Kevin.
Hashtag fake news.
I'm talking about cable talk shows. I won't name any names. These are national shows.
Sure.
They exist to stir the pot, and they exist for people who are partisan, who want to be angry all day, every day. I think there's a lot of people who felt disenfranchised during the Obama years, and I think they feel re-enfranchised, and they're really angry, there's just so much anger, I feel like. And I'm not saying it's just on the right. I see the Fox, because my folks really love Fox, so I spend a lot of time with them now, and so I see these very angry people yelling all the time.
Well, there's a point to that, and having been a guest on the O'Reilly Factor, and I've been friends with Sean Hannity for years, and whether it was on Nancy Grace or Joe Scarborough or any of the shows in a previous life, I was one of those pundits. And you get pre-interviewed by a producer, and basically they're looking for you to say something outrageous, and then you debate people back and forth. And that's a form of entertainment.
It is.
And there is a side effect, you're right, the polarization of America, whether it was Chris Matthews or Sean Hannity, that's their job, and people are tuning into it, whether we like it or not.
And to be good, people just screamed at each other and Chris Matthews, right? I never really watched his show, but I saw clips of it.
Well, and I remember when Fox News first came on, and you had CNN and Fox News, and they were kind of neck and neck competing. And then there was MSNBC, which was kind of just, it didn't know what to do. And I thought at the time, oh, wouldn't this be great if MSNBC came out as like the right down the middle, you know, the serious journalism.
But what is right down the middle? I think that's the question.
Well, then came along Rachel Maddow.
Yeah.
I was going to say,
boom!
They did not go that route.
I was going to say, right down the middle, I don't think it's perceived at this point. As well.
Yeah.
No, that's what I mean.
But they had an opportunity, right?
Thought at the time that they had an opportunity to do that, and they didn't do that.
Is there anyone who's right down the middle, though? Who are our pundits who are right down the middle? Has anybody looked for them?
I'll say one. Jake Tapper probably is the closest. He gets ripped from the left and the right. Former writer at Salon, former Washington Post guy. And, I think he was great on ABC. He does State of the Union on CNN. He actually was going toe-to-toe with Jerry Nadler about the Russian investigation, and then he got Nadler to back down a little. Now, that was for my side, so I'm going, yay, Jake. On the other side, when he gives the president a hard time, boo, Jake. But I think Jake Tapper.
Interesting.
He's good.
Hey, I'm gonna change the subject if we can, if that's all right. I want to talk a little bit about news in the Treasure Valley.
Oh, all right.
I think things have. I mean, I think there's been a lot of movement recently, right? And would love to hear your perspective. I mean, we've got here radio and print and television
media.
They're
the journalists. I'd be the pundit. They will correct you on that, but yes.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a lot going on right now, and would love to hear your perspectives on what is going on. Talk to the people out there that are listening about what they should be watching in the market as it changes. And I just think it's interesting right now. It's an interesting time in the Treasure Valley and in Idaho for news.
There's a lot going on. I mean, every day you mentioned press releases. My goodness. I mean, it's, what are you going to pick today? It's exciting because there's so much going on. And the truth is, before I moved here in 2016, I'd never been here. I'd seen Boise on a map. I knew there was potatoes here. I did some research. I watched the news at 4.
Did you know there were goats, though, Joe?
I did not. You want to talk? Okay, going back like 3 conversations, I've been interviewed one time for a publication, and even with a story about goats, I was so nervous what they were going to write, because you're doing this interview, and I don't know, you say things, and you kind of black out, and you're like,
you kind of
what did I say? And so when the article came out, my dad read it first. He's like, oh, it was good. Like, oh, God, I don't want to read it. Anyways.
It is a good reminder of how scary
it is
to be interviewed. And, Scott and I have been at it a long time. We forget that we're not, that people are afraid of us. Yeah. Like, I'm always like, what is there to be afraid of? But
try going in front of an editorial board.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard. It's hard. I mean, even when you're talking about the softest story ever, it's like, did I just ruin my career by making a bad joke over the phone? Like, yeah.
Scott, tell me what's going on with your paper. I think it's interesting. I mean, I live in the 83616, and I got the Idaho Press coming to my house now. Good. That's a big change.
Yeah, and it goes back to the purchase of the Idaho Press and Pioneer News Group. Our former owners sold our chain of newspapers to Adams Publishing Group in November of last year. And Adams Publishing is bullish on the newspaper print industry, and they own a couple hundred newspapers across the country. One of the things that happened when Adams purchased us, the Idaho Statesman decided to leave the press. They were being printed. We were printing the Idaho Statesman at our printing press in Nampa. And when Adams purchased us, the Statesman, McClatchy, the parent company of the Statesman, wanted to renegotiate the terms of the printing agreement. They were unable to negotiate terms that were that each side liked, so the Statesman decided to move their printing operations to Twin Falls to have the paper printed in Twin Falls. And at that point, Adams, not only did we lose a big chunk of revenue that we needed to make up somehow, Adams also recognized an opportunity in the market to provide late-night high school football sports scores, BSU results in the next day's paper, city council meetings, and so saw an opportunity in the market to provide a print product for the entire Treasure Valley. And so we went on a spending spree, and we hired Betsy Russell, and we hired three reporters to open a Boise bureau. We hired a couple more editors, and brought back our third section, and hired Gene Huff to be our community editor, and did a lot of things, and then aggressively marketed into Ada County to get new subscribers. And so far, it's going very well. We have about 7,000 new subscribers in just the past 4 months. And we're trying to keep up with that demand, but we still feel that print has a runway, not only for readers, but revenue, that there's still a lot of revenue to be made in print, and I think we are seeing a lot of businesses coming back to print, recognizing that, I just put up a Facebook page and that didn't work, there's got to be other modes of advertising. So that's kind of our strategy. Want to be the newspaper, the local newspaper for the entire Treasure Valley, and so far so good.
Big change. Katie, what about Statesman during the same time?
Well, I gotta say, Scott's the editor of the Idaho Press, and I am just a reporter at the Idaho Statesman. I've been there 13 years, so I've been there a while. So I can speak from a reporter's perspective. I don't really feel comfortable speaking for the whole paper and the whole corporation.
Sure.
So, they brought in an editor, Rhonda Prass, a couple years ago, and we've been heavily focused on digital because Clatchy is a very digitally focused company. We believe digital is the future. And as a journalist, I really love it. I love multimedia journalism. I love video. I love audio. I love podcasts. I listen to podcasts all the time. I love radio.
Appreciate that.
And
thank
so
you.
I just feel like journalism.
She threw you a bone there, Kevin.
Journalism is richer with the multimedia aspect. Print is great. My dad loves the e-edition of the Statesman, and he's 80 and he's gone digital. He reads most everything digitally, but he can watch press conferences. We do Facebook Live all the time. I feel like we can bring people there in the moment. We can give people the voice of the person we're interviewing. The deputy on the scene, the police chief talking about a terrible stabbing spree. I think it's an exciting time to be a journalist, even a print journalist, because technically we're all multimedia now. I think all three of us, we're kind of in the same business. We all have websites, we all write articles, we all shoot videos, we all do podcasts. So I think it's as difficult as it is with the trying to figure out the financing of media corporations, and losing people, it's a super great time to be a journalist.
It's healthy competition, too, because there's so many people moving into the Valley right now, into the state, and they don't know who they're supposed to watch. So there's a time now where you have people just coming in organically and deciding for themselves which newspaper am I going to read? Which TV station am I going to watch?
Hey, we all know which TV station.
Well,
I've seen the statistics when I did my ad buys.
You know. But it's true,
KTVB
though.
Is so dominant. I mean, look at digital and over the airwaves. I mean, it's not even close, right, Joe?
I haven't seen the numbers, but
yeah,
they're
pretty.
I don't look at the numbers.
This is not fake news.
I don't look at the numbers. I just keep my head down and do my job. But that's what you say. That's what you say. But it is exciting.
He's quoting you now. But yeah.
Well, now I got to learn how to talk around questions because that was something that I thought about. I thought about in the car ride. I said this is gonna be so backward because I've interviewed Dr. Ahlquist and he's talked around questions. I'm sure David taught you how to talk around questions.
I did not. Maybe once or
maybe
twice.
Maybe once or twice. So it's like, I hope he doesn't just, like, get me on
it's
something.
It's an interesting time for old-style print journalists like us, too, because there's automatic instant feedback from our readers on what they like. And that's good and bad, because some of the best and most important stories don't always drive traffic. And so trying to figure out how to give people what they want and what they need is more tricky, I think.
Yeah, and I think that there are two different audiences. I think there are... Their digital audience likes certain stories, and print audience likes different stories. And I think that there's not always a meshing of the two. And it's, you know, for somebody who's been in print journalism, newspaper journalism for 25 years, I know that it's always been, you know, we think this is an important story. We think it is, you know, and you go cover the goats running loose, and the readers tell you instantaneously that they like it.
But that doesn't change lives. The goats don't change lives. What you guys do, and I think we're blessed to live in a town with two newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't happen everywhere. But you guys change lives. Joe changes lives when he picks that story about, you know, Wednesday's Child or, you know, a nonprofit that needs something. I mean, we love the goats, we love the clicks. You know, that's the bean counters. That's not what you guys do. You guys change lives.
We have to do everything now, though.
Yeah.
And what I would say, just so that you understand what it's like to be a newspaper journalist today, is that you're feeding two beasts. The online product and the print product are two different worlds with two different needs. You almost need two different staffs to, you know, getting in on the nitty-gritty on that, Scott would know more about that, but, you know, I have stories that run online days before they show up in print. I mean, it's a very strange phenomenon when people are like, I love this story, why isn't it in the paper? You know, it's like, well, because I don't decide that, you know. The editors decide when it runs.
You know, hopefully people listening to this are going to have a chance to learn something new. As you're sitting here, you know, hopefully we have people that are listening to this thinking, what would they take away on today's modern journalism? Where we are, where we're headed, what would you want to tell them to take away from this podcast?
There's a lot of good storytelling still. And I think there's this idea that everything's just quick tweets, quick hits, quick bits. You know, here's a car accident, here's a murder, here's the weather, move on. And there are so many great stories that show up in both of the papers that I read and on all the television stations. And because there's so much going on, you'll get some of the similar top stories, but there's great features in so many communities. And when you are moving to a new place, and I know so many people are moving here, there are so many great people here, and you learn about great stories. Brian Holmes at KTVB does his Idaho Life, and every week it's dynamite because it's an Idaho story about a real Idahoan, something interesting in their community. Sometimes you live in Boise, sure, but a lot of times they don't, and you learn about these communities, and in both papers you'll find out small town politics, small town issues, and to me that's the most interesting. And I think if you don't know that it's there, you're not going to look for it. But there are really great stories to be told, not just the headlines.
Yeah, and I you know, this may blend into the what inspires you, but I think the most important thing, and the reason that I do journalism is because of that watchdog role. And, you know, my wife and I bought the CUNY-Malba News because I wanted to cover city council meetings. I wanted to cover school board meetings. I was not able to do that at the bigger paper that I was at. So for me, the most important role that we have as journalists is to hold our governments accountable, to see what the city is spending, to see what decisions the school board is making. And I think if we didn't do that, you know, no one else would. And it's the foundation of democracy. you know, when you're making a decision on who to vote for governor, but, you know, city council members and school board members, you know, West State had found out pretty fast how important those school board elections were. And so that's the value that I think we provide. And what the future is, I don't know. And I hope that we can still figure out how to pay journalists to cover city council mm-hmm. meetings and school board meetings and uncover things.
Well, and some of these journalists, you know, I think of my coworker Audrey Dutton. You know, I don't think there's anybody in the state of Idaho who understands healthcare, who's a journalist, better than Audrey Dutton. I mean, you want to be sure this woman is paid and is writing stories. And, I mean, she's going to tell you how to survive in this country today. I mean, I mean that is an expertise that, you know, we absolutely, the community needs to respect and read and pay for. I mean, it's, you know, these are professional journalists with expertise. It's not, like, a lot of what I do, I mean, I'll go out to a car crash, I cover crime. I have a certain kind of expertise, but the kind that she's developed requires years and years of learning. You can't just throw somebody into a job like that and have them understand healthcare. You understand healthcare having worked in the industry, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's a complicated world.
It is a very complicated world. That's a great point. I mean, and I agree with you. As soon as those stories come out, you dive right into them because you know the work's been done, right? But I would say that that's not. There's so many good stories. Joe, back to where you started this. If you read both papers, right, and you get online, and you know, that's my daily routine, you know, KTVB.com, you know, Press, Statesman every day, that's my morning read. There's a lot of great things out there and a lot of great reporting and a lot of real professionalism. And I think that's one of the reasons we wanted to have this is to let people know that local journalism is alive and well, that things are changing. It's an important part of our society, and the watchdog. I'm glad you brought that up, Scott. That's not fake news. That's true reporting. That's what we need. Because if it's not journalism, if it's not good reporters digging up these stories, it's not going to be dug up. Kevin.
No, I've got a couple questions, but you know, when we beat up on journalists all the time, we forget that there is great quality journalism that makes a difference. You go back to a story the Washington Post broke many years ago about Walter Reed. And the things going on there, how the veterans were mistreated, they still have some issues, but that was really gripping. You're not going to get that on Hannity or O'Reilly or anything like that, and I think sometimes people miss that. All of you have charitable outreaches. I mean, we were talking about the Canyon County Animal Shelter. That's a huge story. The Statesman started it. I got wind of it. The Press at the time, the Press Tribune, covered it, and there I am living in a kennel with a little dog. Thousands of lives were saved, and here you have, Channel 7 covered it, and here you have this maligned animal shelter in Canyon County coming within eight dogs of winning a national competition, beat out by San Antonio. That's what we don't understand is that journalism can unite, can make a difference, mm-hmm. and you guys are all examples of that.
Well, at the end of the day, it's about community, and there are tough things to talk about in the community, and then there's great things to talk about in the community. And one coming up, one that's going to happen in December, is 7 Cares Idaho Shares. And to me, that's one of the most exciting things of the year, because leading up to it, we get to tell incredible stories about people whose lives were affected by charity and by the generosity of our community. And on that day, the live, you know, 5-hour broadcast, we see hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Idahoans come from home, go out to the grocery store, go out to Albertson Stadium, and it's days like that where you remember, like, this is why I do this. It's for this community who's dedicated in making a difference, and there's great people in this community that want to make a difference, whether it's helping a food bank, helping an animal shelter, and Idaho Gives is also a campaign that's exciting to report around because there's so many very generous people in this valley that want to do good. And it's easy to forget sometimes when you're caught up in the fast pace of the news, when it's car crashes and crime and weather. But at the end of the day, this is about community, and we do this for our community. And at a local and hyper-local level, that's why I do it as a journalist. You know?
And verify. Now it's time for the gotcha question.
Okay.
The big question. Tommy, you want to ask it or you want me to?
You ask it.
We'll start with you, Katie. What inspires you? What inspires you to strive for excellence?
I thought about this a little bit. You know, my coworkers inspire me. I mean, you know, we've gone through some rough times in recent years, and You know, they're young journalists. I know millennials have taken some hits in recent years, you know, those millennials. But, you know, I work with a lot of millennials, and they work hard, and they are kicking butt. And, you know, you can get down from time to time. And I just want to say that I think my coworkers are, you know, super inspirational. They keep me going. They love journalism. They love the city of Boise. They love the Treasure Valley. They work so hard, despite what some of we've talked about today, where, you know, national politics, you know, people call us the media. I'm like, what are you talking about? I've been here for all these years. You know me. I'm your neighbor, right? So I would say, you know, my coworkers really, I think, inspire me.
Yeah. You know, what inspires me, what drives me is writing stories that end up making a difference, you know, particularly bringing to light something that otherwise would not have been brought to light. You know, I think about the story that Ruth Brown, who is now with the Idaho Statesman, when she was with the Idaho Press Tribune, she did a story on rape kits that found out that police agencies were not sending in rape kits to be tested. There were hundreds of rape kits untested throughout the state of Idaho that nobody really knew until Ruth did that story. You know, we've got a story coming out this Sunday about the 700 inmates, the prisoners from Idaho who are down in Texas at the Eagle Pass Correctional Facility. And it ain't good. And we talked to four or five prisoners who are at the Eagle Pass Correctional Facility right now. And it comes out on Sunday. I am excited. I cannot wait for the Sunday paper to come out and read that story. And with the hopes that other people will read that story and say, geez, we need to do something here. This is not good. That's for me, that's why I got into it. That's what I saw when I saw All the President's Men when I was 12 years old. That's what has always driven me, and that continues to be what inspires me.
Making a positive difference in my coworkers, that was what I was going to say. You want to make a difference, but you want to make a positive difference. And when we get a phone call from someone that says, you helped me understand this, thank you for doing that piece, I now know this, or I didn't know about this, that it makes it worth it when you realize that, you know, people are reading and watching and you're helping them. But also, to piggyback off coworkers, at Channel 7, we have incredible leadership. Kate Morris, general manager and president, she inspires me. And it's written on the wall. You've walked by it at Channel 7. I don't know if you've read all the posters. Mm-hmm. Our vision statement, it's there. And you can have words on a wall, but for me, it's kind of like Notre Dame, where it's play like a champ today, where you read those words, our vision statement, and I buy in, you know, I'm all in. And it's about, you know, making a difference, and that inspires me and my coworkers who I see working so hard, and sometimes on stories that never air. Sometimes the story doesn't work out, and you see someone put in hours of work, and it just doesn't turn out. But for me, that's like, that's why we do it. We work hard, and no one at home is going to see this hard work, but I did, and I want to replicate that, and I want to work hard too.
It's not as glamorous as in the movie, I gotta say.
No, definitely not.
There's
a lot of hard work that doesn't get seen. You see the movie, like The Post, it's like, oh, wow, it's so exciting all the time. It's not.
Well, I just want to take a moment. I mean, I learned more about the media than a lot of other things in my last 2 years, and I will tell you, I walked away with nothing but just sincere appreciation and gratitude for your profession, for your work ethic, for your care and passion for our community and for our state. And thank heavens you do what you do, and that you're committed to this important part of what makes America great. And I hope that our listeners will understand that there is a difference, and that there are hardworking neighbors, our families next to us that are out doing this because they care. And that was my takeaway. And we just wanted a chance to talk about that. And I think it's a good subject for people to hear. And I think. Couldn't thank you enough for being here today and for I think just what was said. Kev?
It's great to hear and see true believers and to know that the good continues. So thank you all, and we thank everybody. We urge everybody to strive for excellence.
You've been listening to the Inspire Excellence Podcast. We invite you to find something that inspires you this week. Join us again for our next episode.